And we're holding on Sadiq Ahmed Bey's 7 lines from the bottom. We're still in the middle of learning the halachas about chasima. This is that the Torah says you're not allowed to muzzle an ox, or as we're going to see soon, it applies to any kind of animal while it's doing work for you. You have to allow it to eat on the job. So the Gemara says, if a person muzzles the animal, but he's not the one who then goes and has it threshed for him. So Reuven muzzles the animal, and then Shimon takes that animal muzzled and threshes with it. And similarly, also, if Reuven ties two different animals to a wagon, for example, where we know the Torah says you can't have two different types of animals pull a wagon or plow or whatever. So one person ties them, Potter, in both those cases, he's Potter from Malchus because he's not the one who did the actual threshing or he's not the one who had the animal thresh or pull the wagon Only the one who has the animal do the threshing or who has the animals pull the wagon would be the one who gets Malchus if they're in these cases. So the first one, it's kind of similar to the way you have, for example, in Hilchos Shabbos, you might have, for example, a person puts a whole pot of food on the stove, and then another person comes and lights the fire. It's only the second one who's going to be chayav for cooking the food. The first one is going to be potter avol also. He's not allowed to do that, but he's not chayav malchus for it. The same way over here, the one who hitched up the animals over there is going to be chayav malchus. Is not going to be chayav malchus. Only the one who actually caused them to pull the wagon. And the same thing as far as the muzzling. So the Gemara says Itmar. So now we have a discussion about, now all this time we've been talking about muzzling the animal as putting a physical muzzle on it. Or yesterday also we talked about some possibilities as far as doing things to cause the animal to not eat. For example, we said putting a lion around there so that the animal is scared to eat or not giving it a drink and so on and so forth. So now, Itmar, Chosma B'Koil. What about if you muzzled it with your voice? So every time it puts down its head about to eat, you yell at it, and it pulls up. Similarly, we said as far as having two different types of animals hitched up to a wagon and having it pull. What if you didn't like this? You could have you whip the animals or whatever to make them go. What about again? You yell to them and they start going. Is that considered that he's being over on the mitzvah? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev Resh Lakish Amar Potter. Rabbi Yochanan says he's going to be Chayev Malchus for that, even though it was only verbal. Resh Lakish says he's Potter. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev because he says Akimas Piv Hav Yemaisa. Just the fact that he moves his lips, Akimas literally means curving, the curving or moving his mouth, his lips, is itself considered a Maisa and is enough to be Machayev him. Now, there are other cases, Tosfos discusses in some detail over here, there are other cases in Shas where we say that things that are done verbally are not considered a maisa. We usually say we're going to discuss soon in the Gemara the point about lav she'en ben maisa. And you have usually a lav she'en ben maisa you don't get malchus for, and there are a few exceptions all involving where a person says something, where a person swears falsely in Hashem's name, where a person declares a tmura, etc. Anyway, so what is it? Here Rabbi Yochanan is calling it a maisa. So Tosfos says the difference is here, the fact is a maisa is taking place because of what he's doing. There we're talking about things where no further maisa takes place. He curses somebody in Hashem's name, or he does a tmura or whatever, and then that's it. The thing is done, and no further. I mean, there can be consequences of it later. Well, the consequences are that he's chayav malchus, etc. But nevertheless, we don't have. Whereas over here, we have something immediately happens as a result of that, namely that the animals start moving, or the animal stops eating and continues threshing. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan says that's enough for it to be considered a maisa. In terms of chassidus, by the way, the Alter Rebbe points out in a couple of places in Tanya that mitzvahs are meant to be done as physical bodies and as neshamas in physical bodies, because d'ilo lo b'taktonim, and therefore even mitzvahs that and therefore even mitzvahs so most mitzvahs involve physical actions, and even the ones that don't, we say akimas piv havi maisa, and therefore that itself is considered a maisa, and also you wouldn't be able to say those things. You wouldn't be able to learn Torah, for example, without a physical mouth to say the words and a physical brain in which to store the words. Anyway, that's Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish, I'm a potter, because kolol I have a maisa. Because he says the voice is not considered, just saying something with your voice, says Reish Lakish, is not considered a maisa. Now Tosfos does bring up the point. In general, we say, here we're talking about chasima. Now elsewhere, particularly in Makkos, the Gemara explains that chasima is actually the paradigm from which we learn all. Where do we say? We say that if a person is over on a lav, then he's chayiv malchus. What type of lav? So we say, since the Torah talks about malchus, and immediately after that it says, leisachs and shorbedishoy, then we learn that there's a comparison between them, that what kind of lav gets a person malchus, something which is similar to leisachs and shorbedishoy, where there's a maise involved, and where it's not a lav amitik la'eseh, because you can't undo it afterwards by doing an eseh, unlike, for example, stealing, where v'heshev es hagzela, etc. Now, according to Reish Lakish, we're saying that it's possible to do chasima without a maisa, and so according to him, and he's saying that it's potter from Malkus, so in that case, how can we learn from that to other things that there needs to be a maisa? So Tosfos discusses that Reish Lakish will have a couple of different ways of saying it. He'll say, yeah, you could have a case of chasima without doing something, only verbally, but most of the time chasima involves an actual action, or there's another answer, or the Gemara in Makkos over there discusses that there's a different drasha, how we know that a lav has to be a lav sheyesh v'maisa in order to get Makkos. Okay, in any case, Reish Lakish is saying over here there's no maisa, akimas piv he doesn't consider as a maisa, therefore he's potter from Makkos. So the Gemara says, "Eisved Rabbi Yochanan l'Reish Lakish." So Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, "How can you say that the person is potter from Malkus for something that just involves speaking?" The Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Tmura starts by saying, "Hakol Mimirin." Anybody is able to create a Tmura by saying that this animal should be instead of that animal which was designated as a korban. And the Mishnah says, when it says Hakol Mimirin, you shouldn't think Loisha Odom Rashoi Lahomer. We don't mean that anybody is Meimir, meaning that they're allowed to. You shouldn't think it's something you're allowed to do. The fact is, it's allowed in the Torah, in this week's Parsha, to not do that. Ela, what it means is She'im Heimir Mumer. It means that Hakol Mimirin means that a person, anybody, whether a man or a woman, as the Gemara discusses over there, is able, actually, as the Gemara is going to bring over here in a second, is able to create a Tmura. And if he does mumer, then it takes effect. The animal has the dinim of tmura take effect. The sofig as harboim, but they're getting malchus. So we see, in other words, that even though maimer is only something verbal, you're saying this animal should be instead of that one, nevertheless, he's chayav malchus. So the same thing over here. Even though he only called out to the animal to tell it to stop eating, he should be chayav malchus for being over on loisachson. Incidentally, Tosfos elsewhere talks about that it's not so simple. Maybe he should be chayev double malchus, because the pasuk says in this week's parasha, lo yachlifenu v'lo yomir oisei. So maybe he's being over on both of those. Fine, we're not getting into that level of detail over here. We're just saying that he's getting malchus without even though it says arboim, it means, you know, he's getting a full amount of malchus. Maybe in fact he is getting double malchus, or it really depends. Different mafarshim talk about different possible cases where a person might in fact be chayav for only one time. Be that as it may, the point is that we see that a person can get malchus for something involving only words. Omalei, sort of Reish Lakish answers, Hamani Rabbi Yehuda. That Mishnah in Tmura is going like Rabbi Yehuda. Dama lav she'en b'mayit, shlech dama lav she'en b'mayit, so loikin olav. Rabbi Yehuda holds that you can get malchus for a lav she'en b'mayit. So, in fact, in the Gemara in Makkos, he learns it out from, there are in fact a couple of cases where the Torah says that a person says something and he gets Malkus. One of them is Edim Zomimin. Another one is Motzi Shemra, where a husband defames his wife and claims that she was Mizana doing their Erisin. And in both those cases, the Pasuk says that in both those cases they get Malkus. So Rabbi Yehuda learns from that in other cases also you can get a Malkus for a lav shein b'maisa. The Chum disagree because shnik suma boim kachod, etc. We'll learn all about it in Masechta Malkus next year, Be'ez Hashem. Anyway, So Rabbi Yehuda holds that you can get malchus for that, but the Chachamim disagree, and Rish Lakish says, I'm going according to the Chachamim. Well, the question is, how could you possibly say that Mishnah in Tumura goes like Rabbi Yehuda? Well, Katani Resha, the beginning of that Mishnah begins, anybody is able to make a Tumura, whether men or women, and so we wonder about that, and the Gemara and Tumura, what is that Hakol coming to include? It means Asuri Yorish. It comes to include somebody who yaushed the carbon from his father. So exactly that. So Yaakov had designated an animal for a korban, and then he passed away, and his son Reuben inherited the animal, and now he makes a tumura with it. So if he's able to create a tumura, or deloik Rabbi Yehuda, and the point is not like Rabbi Yehuda. I think the Gemara explains over there why Rabbi Yehuda holds that and why Rabbi Meir disagrees with him. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda, and the Gemara says over there that someone who yaushin a korban from his father is not able to make a tumura with it, because he learns from Sukkim over there that he's not, and he's also not soymech if he decides when he brings the actual animal as a korban, he does not do smicha on it, where his father would have done smicha on it, where he's still alive. So obviously the Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. And the answer is fine. Hi Tana, Savala Kravase Bachoda or Polagale Bachoda. You could say that the Tana of that Mishnah in Tumura, Rosh Lakish will say, holds like Rabbi Yehuda in one thing and disagrees with him in another. He agrees with him that a person can get Malkus for Lav She'in Me Maisa. But he disagrees with him, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says that a Yodish is not able to create a Tumura, and then the Tana of that Mishnah says that he can. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yochanan doesn't need any of that. Rabbi Yochanan will say, as Tosfos had mentioned before, that when you have something where in fact the entire thing is accomplished just with words, then yes, that would then those are in fact the among the exceptions of Nishba and Meimer and Makal Chaver B'Shem, that a person does in fact get Malchus for that. Rabbi Yochanan himself says that in a Gemara in Shavuos. He doesn't need to say that Mishnah in Tumura is only like Rabbi Yehuda, because according to him, since over there Meimer is one of those things that takes effect immediately, then that's that. The Machlokas is over here, where again the fact is as a result of him saying something, it actually causes the animal to stop eating. He'll consider that an actual maisa because Akim a spiv habi maisa. If a person does muzzle an ox and then has it threshed for him, loika, he gets malchus, because that's what we're saying, that definitely then he's done a maisa, even Rish Lakish is going to agree with that, because there was a maisa. And furthermore, umashalom, he's also going to have to pay if the ox belongs to somebody else and he rented it or borrowed it, he's also going to have to pay. Because, like this, when he borrowed or rented the ox, the expectation would be he'd have to feed it. That's usually how it is when you rent or borrow an animal. The equivalent nowadays would be you borrow somebody's car, you bring it back with gas in it. You fill up the tank. So anyway, so he has to pay the expected amount that the animal would have eaten while it was threshing. Dalad kabin lapar of a gimel kabin lachamur. If it was a cow, then he has to pay 4 kabin. And if it was a donkey, then 3 kabin. It's made proportional. Nemuka Yosef points out that this is brings from the Rashba, that this is when you have for each day and for a large amount of threshing, and then you have to prorate it accordingly, according to the number of days and according to the amount of threshing that was done, and for that matter, if you only did the threshing for half a day, then it would be less, whatever, but that's the basic formula is based on that. The question is, v'ha'ena loiko mesva ena loiko mashalim. Don't we have a usual rule that a person does not get malchus and also misa, or a person does not get malchus and also have to pay? When the pasuk describes the concept of malchus, it says that a person gets punished kedei rishosai, according to his wickedness, from which we learn that a person only gets punished once, not twice, for the same thing. So why over here is he paying? Amar Abaya, Hamani Rav Meir, he dama loiko mashalim. So Abaya says, you could say, oh, this Braisa goes according to Rav Meir. Rav Meir holds the Rav Meir, does not hold with that Dirasha, and he holds that there is a case, that there are cases where loiko mashalim, where a person does get malchus, and he pays. Tosfos points out, the Rameyer in the Gemara and Makkos says that it applies by Adam Zomerman, for example, and then he learns it from Motzi Shemra, but then discusses, so maybe it only applies to Knas. Here it's a matter of Mammon, but why would it apply? And Tosfos discusses why Rameyer would say over here that it applies. One thing Tosfos points out is only when, for example, when you have both of them are, both of them are caused by, for example, the person is Edus Sheker, he testified falsely on somebody, and therefore they're Chayav Malkus for the false testimony, and they're Mashalim Mammon, so in that case he would say, over here, the Rameyer, in other words, would basically agree with the drasha of Shtei Rishoyis, but he would say that there are certain cases where we apply it and certain cases where not. So this would be one of the cases where he says that Loiko Mashal. Okay. Another answer. Rava Amar. Rava says you have to consider. We learned this in Bava Kama as well. Actually, we learned this whole discussion in Bava Kama as well in connection with Hashlomah Abba Hamisha when a person stole on Shabbos or a person shechted on Shabbos, whatever. Anyway, so like this. We know the Torah tells us you're not allowed to bring Esnan Zoyna as a korban. So a man goes to a woman. He says, I'm offering you, I'll give you a sheep. If you have relations with me, then, and it's relations that are also by the Torah, then that sheep becomes also to use as a korban. Now, so Rava Amar, Esnan, Osra Torah, actually, Hagos Habach adds extra words over here, B'vol Lotzis Yidei Shemayim. You're talking about, where, and in fact, Tosfos has this Girsa as well, what we're talking about when we say that he has to pay, is not talking about that based in here on earth will force him to pay, but rather if he wants to be Yotze, Yidei Shemayim. The fact is that Hashem holds him responsible not only for muzzling the animal, and therefore he's getting malchus for that, but also to pay his fellow Yid for the amount of food that he deprived the animal of. So Rava is understanding, according to that Girsa, that we're talking B'bolotis Yidei Shemayim. And then, anyway, so it's like this. The Torah tells us, again, that you can't use Esnan as a korban, and Esnan, Osir Torah, Vafil Ba'al Imo. Now consider what would happen if a man's own mother if he offers his own mother an esnan to have relations with her. There's going to be chiyuv misa involved because they're going to be chayiv skila. Nevertheless, the Torah just says generically esnan zoyna is also. So suppose he does give it to her. They're going to be chayiv misa. And what if he doesn't give it to her? What if he has relations with her? And later on, she comes and says, "Nu, where's my sheep?" Well, if they were to go to Beis Din, then Beis Din certainly wouldn't make him pay. It's a classic case of kamal v'dadamimine. But nevertheless, if he does end up giving her the sheep, it will be considered esnan and it will be also. So we see that even where there's misa involved, it just means that Beis Din doesn't have the power to make him do both, but he's not Yotze Yidei Shemayim unless he pays. Otherwise, it actually goes on to say, after all, if he wasn't in some sense obligated to pay, then you wouldn't even consider an Esnan, it would be considered only a gift, and then it wouldn't become also as a korban. The same thing over here continues, applying over here to the matter of muzzling the animal, he should have to pay. Beis Din doesn't have the ability to, according to the Chachamim, who disagree with the mayor, because Shtei Rishoyis. But nevertheless, he's not Yotze unless he pays. Then Rashi also brings another point, that another nafkamina of it would be, what if the other guy was Tofus? What if the owner of the animal said, you know what, you muzzled my ox while you were threshing, therefore you deprived it of X amount of food. I'm going to take X amount of property or whatever from you to satisfy that. We can't take it away from him because the fact is he is chayav to pay, and it's only that Beis Din wouldn't impose that penalty on him. And Rashi says that his Rebbe, he learned this from Mori Azokin, from my elder Rebbe, and he brought me a proof that this is the meaning of it. So whatever the case, the point is, Rava is saying that you see, even though you don't say a person doesn't get Misa and have to pay, or a person doesn't have to get Malkus or pay, nevertheless, there is, in fact, payment involved, and if Ba Lotzis Yidei Shemayim, then he does need to pay. And the word Mishalim over here suggests that he is actually doing it, Lotzis Yidei Shemayim. So that's what it means. In other words, that therefore, so there is payment involved over here. If he chooses to pay, or Bolot Sisidei Shemayim, or as Rashi says, the other possibility is even if the other person takes it away from him, the mother in the case of the Esnan, the guy who owns the cow in the case of the Hir of Chasima, then it's going to be a valid payment, and therefore Rava says that's what it means, that loiko mashala. Okay, a third answer, Rav Papa says you don't need all of that. The fact is the Chir of the Misa and of the Malkus come at different times. Mishas Meshicha is Chayav Labim Zenesera. Once he does Meshicha on the animal, that now he's going to, he borrowed it or he rented it, and we're going to learn later on, and later on when we talk about the Dinim of Shomrim, we're going to talk in the next parak, we're going to talk about that, we're going to talk about that once he does Meshicha, now he becomes Chayav in whatever type of Dinim of Shmira that he is, a Shoyol, a Socher, or as the case may be. So at that point, he becomes Chayav to feed the animal, or Milka, Leiloki, on Shas Chasima. Meanwhile, when is he getting Malkus? Only later on, when he muzzles the animal and uses it to thresh. So then we don't say Loiko Mashalim, because in fact they come at different times. So three different possible answers of how it could be. There are possibilities over here. Maybe Taka they hold that. Listen, since the Torah is saying that when you're threshing, then it's not automatically because you're renting an animal. Automatically, you have to feed it. When you're threshing with it, you have to feed it. And here, at that time, when he muzzles it, then he becomes chayiv in both. Abaya and Rava might say something like that. So the Gemara says in this connection, Amar Papa, Hani Mili Bo Minai Dvera Papa Ba'aba. The household of Papa Ba'aba, who was a contemporary of Rapapa, obviously, so obviously the name Papa must have been common at that time. Anyway, two things they asked me, Opashti Lahuli Isura, and I answered both of them that they're also to do that. One of them was indeed according to the actual halacha, and the other one was not. That was machmer on them because otherwise they're getting careless with it. The first question was bo minai. They asked me, "Mal lolosh se'isa b'cholav? Are you allowed to knead dough for bread with milk?" I answered them that it's also kehilchasa, and that is indeed according to the actual halacha. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, in Loshen Ese Issa B'cholav, you're not allowed to knead dough for bread with milk. The in Loshen, if you did, Kolapas Kola Asura, the entire loaf of bread is also Nehergal Avera, because it may easily lead to Avera, because you're not going to notice that this bread was made with milk, and bread is commonly eaten with all kinds of foods, so therefore you're going to end up eating with Fleishiks. Kayotzeboy, and similarly, ain't toshen as a tanner ba'alya. You're not allowed to, before you bake bread, smear the oven with fat of an, the alya is actually the fat of the tail of an animal, but it means any kind of fat. The imtosh, and if he did, kolapas kolasura, then any bread baked in that oven is also adjiyasik as a tanner, unless you fire up the oven to burn away the fat. So now, it does mention in Shulchan Aruch, based on other Gemaras, that you have heterim for it if you make the bread in a distinctive shape, so that it's obvious that it's milchik or fleishik, as the case may be, or if you make it in small loaves, so that they're all eaten in one sitting. That is where we have the Raman, the Sekelim on the Shulchan Aruch point out, this is where we have the heter to make things like cheese blintzes, here it's coming up Shavuos, and various other things like that, where we're allowed to meat pies and things like that, where we're allowed to make them because they're recognizably milchuk or fleishuk, as the case may be. Yeah, when you have the cheese coming out of it, but even if not, whatever, the point is they have a distinctive shape, and they're also often made in small sizes where you eat them in one sitting. The concern is more that you're going to have a whole loaf of bread and cut off a slice now and eat it with milchuk, and then later on you're going to forget that it's milchuk bread and then cut off another slice and eat it with fleishik. Anyway, so the Papa is saying that I answered them, so they asked whether you're allowed to do that with regular bread, and I said no. Tosfos actually wonders why you would need to fire up the oven. Isn't it knock by knock, and you should be able to, isn't it knock by knock, and you should just need to wipe off the oven? Okay, this isn't really the place to talk about it. Tosfos refers to what they talk about in a Masechta Chulin, so we'll get to it in due time, Bez Hashem. Anyway, the Idach Bo Minai, then Rav Papa says, the family of Rav Papa Bar Abba asked me another question. Ma lahachnis min v'sheinim min ladir. Are you allowed to take two different types of animals and put them together, a male and a female of different species, and put them in one pen? The point being, obviously, the Torah tells us, and we talked before about kilayim in terms of pulling a wagon. It's also to have two different animals of two different species mate together. So here you're not actually causing them to mate, but you're putting them in the same pen, and the likelihood is that one of them is going to be attracted to the other. So Rav Papa says, "Pashti lohuli sura delav kehilchasa." So I answered them that it's also, but that was not technically according to the halacha. I only did that because they shouldn't get careless with these things. Because in fact Shmuel says like this: Uva menafim. When it comes to people who are committing znus, and Adam see that, and they come to Beis Din, ad shiyu kederach menafim. They don't have to actually see the actual commit chobishveferas. As the Gemara is going to say, the actual penetration. They just have to see ad shiyu kederach menafim. They see these two people are lying together in a position which is commonly used for having relations. And then in that case, they can assume on the basis of that they actually did, and then say that the people, and then come to Beis Din and testify, and the people will be chayav Misa or Malkus, as the case may be for it. There is actually an interesting point that the Bahag says on that actually as far as to ask, so the wife to her husband would only be when they see commit chobishveferes. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with that and say that no, the same thing as they be chayav Misa or Malkus, the same way if the Adam see kederach hamanafim, then that's enough to ask her to her husband. Anyway, over kilayim, but when it comes to kilayim, when it comes to the isra of kilayim of animals, ad shiyachnis kimitchol b'shreferes, then a person is chayav malchus only if he actually puts the mitchol into the shreferes. Mitchol, Rashi points out, is an applicator. A shreferes is a tube of eyeshadow, for example. The mitchol is an applicator, a piece of wood or a feather or whatever that you stick in there to get out some of the powder from the or whatever it is from the tube to apply it to the eye. So therefore, the Gemara uses it as a metaphor for the actual penetration of male into female. Anyway, so Bakulayim is chayim only for that. So therefore, it shouldn't be also to put the two of them into one pen, the male and the female animal. But nevertheless, Rav Papa is saying they were being careless about such things, so therefore I told them that it's also. Tosfos actually points out that, the fact is, you could, so what? You could say that what Shmuel is saying is that it's not also min haTorah, but it's also min haDirabon. Tosfos wonders about that. So Marushal points out the fact is that when they're asking, are we allowed to do that? Obviously, they're asking on a Drabbanan level as well. And if Rav Papa is telling them it's Osir, then he's saying it's Zalab Kehilchasa, then that itself implies that Shmuel would say maybe there's no Isur Drabbanan in it at all, and only for them he was being Machmir because they were being careless. Okay. However, the Gemara says, Mosiv Rav Achadboi Bar Ami. Rav Achadboi Bar Ami says, how can Shmuel say that by kilayim, you're only over, only if you actually put in commit for the shveferes. But you have a braisa like this. Even nema behemtachot. Now, the pasuk says, when it describes the mitzvah of not mating animals that are kilayim, it says behemtachol sabia kilayim. Now, why does it have to add the word kilayim? The ilu nema behemtachol sabia. If the pasuk said only, that you're not allowed to mate your animals, for you see Omer, then I would think, lo yech, it means mating even within the same species. It means, lo yech, means you're not allowed to hold on to the female, and at this point, the Gemara assumes that yech means to hold it, to prevent it from running away when the male wants to mate with it. You would think that that's also Talmud Lamed Kilayim. Therefore, the pasuk is saying Kilayim. When it's two animals of the same species, you're allowed to hold on to it. Now, doesn't that imply that if the two animals are kelayim, you're not even allowed to hold on to the female? Meaning, even though you're not putting kmitzchol b'shveferes, nevertheless, he'd be chayiv malchus for that. And the answer is loy. And the answer is no. My achiza haknosa. And the answer is that no. The word achiza in that braisa actually means putting in the mitchel into the shveferes. Why is the braisa using the word achiza lishna malia? It's using a nicer way of saying. In other words, the braisa is saying like this. If it didn't say the word kelayim in the pasuk, you would think that when you have two animals of the same species, you're not allowed to take the male's aver and put it into the female. Which the Gemara is going to describe in a minute, that you are in fact allowed to do that. Now that it says kelayim, then you're allowed to do that, but on the other hand, by kelayim animals, you're not allowed to do that. Well, then that fits nicely with what Shmuel is saying, that only then would a person be chayav malchus. So the braisa is not contradicting Shmuel, provided that we understand that yechois doesn't just mean to hold the female to prevent it from running away, but to actually hold the male's aver and stick it in. So the Gemara continues in this vein. Amar Rav Yehuda, min b'minay mutar lahachnis kmitzchol b'shveferes. When it comes to two animals, a male and a female, of the same species, you are allowed to actually stick the mitzchol into the shveferes. Meaning there's not even an iser of pritzus. Now the Gemara mentions, Rashi points out, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, you're not allowed to watch animals mating. Because it's going to cause hearer, it's going to cause thoughts that a person is not able to control, which are going to have a bad effect on him. But over here, he's busy, my time about Vitetrid, he's busy with his work, he needs to make sure that everything goes the way it's supposed to, and therefore he's too busy to have Hirhurim as a result of that. So that's the point. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you should realize that, and the Pasuk is telling us that by Kelayim such a thing is also, the point is you shouldn't think maybe that's also Midrabbanan or something because of this matter of Hirhur. This point, by the way, about Vititrid has more general applications as well. For example, the fact that how is a Jewish doctor, for example, allowed to be a gynecologist or b'chlal to treat female patients is this is an example of Bavid Tetrid. You have other examples like that where a person is busy with his work and therefore we say he's not gonna get into Hirhurim as a result of that. Anyway. Moshe Rav Achadboy Bar Ami, so Rav Achadboy Bar Ami asked the same question on this as he did on the previous thing about Shmuel's statement. Now, why would he be asking the same question twice? The Ritva points out one possibility is, first of all, he wants to see if maybe there's a second answer, or do we have to use the same answer again? Another possibility is really Rav Achadboy asked the question only once. Now, when Rav Ashi comes to write the Gemara, to compose the Gemara for us, then he split it up into two because we're quoting separately Shmuel's and Rabbi Huda's din. We find such things elsewhere where an Amora asks something one time, and then the Gemara splits it up into two different ones. Anyway, Moser Rav Achadboy Ba'ami, so he asks the same question from the Braisa. Ilu nema behem techolei sabia, if the Pasuk said, you're not allowed to mate your animals, ha'yisi oimer, lo yechos odemas ha'mehema, kadei sh'yala ala zocha, you're not allowed to hold on to the female to prevent it from running away so the male can mate with it. Talmud lema kilayim, therefore the Pasuk says kilayim, it's only about kilayim, such a thing is also implying kilayim would usur, so by kilayim such a thing is usur, hom min b'minay shari, implying that by min b'minay it is mutar, however, min b'minay nami, achiza ein, hachnos aloy, but even by min b'minay, you would only be able to hold on to the female, but not to actually insert the mikhel into the shreferes. So how are you telling me, Rav Yehuda, that such a thing is allowed? And the answer is, like before, my achiza achnosa, the answer is the same as before, that the word achiza over here means to actually stick it in. By my korila achiza, why does the braisa call it achiza lishna malya, does it not want to use nicer language? So the bottom line is, when it comes to kilayim, you're not allowed, machnis kmichel b'shveferes makes a person chayiv malchus. Doing other things, for example, putting them in the same pen may or may not be also d'rabbanan, but in any case, a person doesn't get malchus for it. When it comes to min b'minoy, you're allowed even to stick to kmichel b'shveferes, and we're saying there's no issue of kritzus, because again, b'avid t'trid, he's busy with his work.
Does a modern Rav ever tell someone that something is also an Israeli mutter?
Does it happen that a modern Rav does like a papa and asks and says that something is also when really it's mutter? I think so. I mean, sometimes on a case by case basis, a Rav may see that a person is likely to not realize a certain distinction, and therefore they may ask for something as a precautionary measure. But well, I mean, a Beis Din is allowed to make any precautionary measure for a Kehillah that they feel is appropriate, just they don't have the ability, ever since the end of the Gemara, a Beis Din of one place doesn't have the ability to make their Takonis and Zeris apply to any other place. But, yeah. So the Gemara finishes off. Amar Ravashi, Hom Milsa Bo Minai Dveram Nechemya Reish Kolosa. The family of Nechemya Reish Kolosa asked me this question. Now we said before that Rav Papa had told the family of Rav Papa Ba'aba that they're not allowed to put the two different species into the same pen. So you can't take, for example, a male goat and a female sheep and put them in the same pen. What about the family of the Reish Kolosa asked him, Mao Lahachnis, min uminai vishaene minaladir? What about can you have two different animals, a male and a female, of the same species, as well as another one of a different species into the pen? So could you bring in there a male and a female sheep, as well as a male goat, for example? Do we say, Kivin to Iker, or maybe, or actually, rather two females, rather, he's going to bring in a male and female sheep and a female goat. Would such a thing be mutter? Would we say, Kivin to Iker Mine, since there is a female sheep over there, Bosa Mine Goder, then it's more likely the male sheep, the ram, is going to be attracted to the female sheep, and therefore it's not a problem that it's going to end up mating with the other one. Al Duma, Fila Hochi Loy, maybe even then it's also because it might end up mating with the other one. O Pashti, Vahuli Isura, so Rav Ashi says, I answered them as an Isur, Deloy Kehuchsa, again, not technically, but that's the halacha, Mishum Pritzusa de Abdi, but again, because they're being careless with such things, and they're doing things, avodim, for example, or people who are not bnei Torah, who may come to actually do it via dayim, which would make them chayav malchus. So therefore, we said that it's also even in a case like that as a precautionary measure. Okay. Getting back to the dinim now, we've been talking about the last couple of blots about the dinim of the animal eating on the job. So now getting back to the dinim of a worker eating on the job. And one thing we did establish before is that there is a similarity between them. We had a hekesh between choisim and nechsam, which tells us that whatever applies to one applies to the other. And therefore, since we established that the pasuk says that a human worker can eat from mechubal karka while he's harvesting it, then so can an animal while it's doing the work. And since an animal can eat from what's detached from the ground already, because that's what daish is, that's what loisatz and shor b'disha is, then so can a person. So the Mishnah says, Hoya oisa b'yodav avalod b'raglov, if the human worker is working only with his hand, but not with his feet, b'raglov avalod b'yodav, or he's working only with his feet, not with his hands, for example, he's treading on grapes, afilo b'ksefai, even if he's only working with his shoulder, for example, he's carrying something, so he's carrying something on his shoulder. So Rashi says, let's say he's not moving his hands and feet, all he's doing is doing work with his shoulder. How would that be? Maybe, for example, somebody else puts the bundle on his shoulder and he doesn't move, and then somebody else takes it off there. Whatever. In all those cases, Hareza Oichel, then he's allowed to eat based on what the Torah says that the worker can eat. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Oimad Shiyasabi Yodav Ravadaglav. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says no, not unless he's actually doing work with his hands and his feet, as the Gemara is going to explain why. So the Gemara says my timer. So first, why does the Tanakhama say that he's allowed to, no matter what body parts he's doing the work with? He saw it, Kerem Reacha, because the pasuk says when you come into your fellow Yid's vineyard, meaning Bachol Ma'id Ovid, and since we established before that it means that he's working over there, so no matter what body part he's working with, the fact is he is Bob Kerem Reay, and therefore he's allowed to eat. On the other hand, we said Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda Eman Shiyasa B'Yodah V'Radaglov, and Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda disagrees. My time is that Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, he's sure. Because he says, the fact is, where we're saying the details of what a person is allowed to eat is based on a comparison with a shur. Well, ma shur achiyasa b'yodah b'raglov, a shur, when it's threshing, is using its hands and its feet, meaning, in other words, its four legs and its hind legs, because an animal walks on all fours. So therefore, so Rabbi Yosef learns from that, af poil achiyasa b'yodah b'raglov, the same thing then applies to a worker, a human worker. Well, boy, Rabbi Bar Avona. So Rabbi Bar Avona asks in this connection, Dosh ba'avzin v'tana golem l'Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda ma'ar. What about a point of Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda if you have geese or chickens doing your threshing or doing some other kind of work for you? Now they only use their feet. Their wings are not strong enough. So Tosfos discusses two possibilities. One is where they're not using their wings at all because they can't really. Their wings are not strong enough to do that. Or maybe even they are using their wings, but the fact is maybe it still needs to be similar enough to a shirt. Maybe the wings of a bird are not similar enough to the four legs of a shirt or to the hands of a person. So the question would be, Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, who according to Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, what would be the din? Are you allowed to muzzle them while they're working? The question is, do we say that it needs to be that they're putting all of their possible effort into it? And in that case, they are, because the fact is, they, according to Tosfos' first explanation, they're not capable of using their wings for this work. And according to the second explanation, they are in fact using their wings as well. So they're using all their kayach. So you do have that, so the same din would apply as by a shur. Or maybe it needs to be adapted that they're using their hands and feet. And you don't, because the wings of a bird, again, according to Tosfos' first explanation, they're not using their wings at all. And according to the second explanation, they are using their wings, but maybe their wings are not considered the equivalent of animal forelegs. So the Gemara says, we can't be sure about that. Maharsha mentions in this connection that it is true that the dinim of Lysaks and Shur Bedisha don't apply only to a Shur. We learned in Baba Kama that we learned by a Gzeda Shava from the Shabbos that the same way as it says over there, Shurcha v'chamurcha v'chol behem techa, the same way over here, it applies to any other kind of animal. But nevertheless, the fact is that if it didn't mean the Gemara is bringing up the possibility that maybe Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda would say birds are different, because otherwise why would it need to say the word shur in the first place? It could say loisodosh b'chasima, don't thresh with something muzzled, and then automatically we would understand that it applies to any kind of thing, whether animals or birds. Which would mean, in other words, Maharsha says, when we learned before that there's a hekesh between a person and an animal, since it says by Saxon shur b'dishoy, we learn that there's a comparison between the Saxon, between you who might muzzle the animal, and the shur, and from that we learned the dinim about the fact that a person is allowed to eat from tolush and that an animal is allowed to eat from mechuber. So Maharsha says maybe Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda would not hold of that drasha. So we don't know what Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda would say if you're using birds to do work for you. Since we mentioned in the Mishnah a case where you're doing work with your feet, so the Gemara gives an example. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bavua. Now, we have in the following Mishnah, we're going to learn that you can't eat from a different species than what you're working with. And we're going to talk about that in the Gemara. So now, what we're going to point out in this little piece over here is that wine and grapes, to that extent, are considered different species. So therefore, poilim, ad shalai hilchul shesi ve'eda bagas, before the workers have walked back and forth at least one time in each direction in the vat, because how do you press grapes? How do they press grapes back then? They would put them in a large vat, and then they would have people stomp on them, and then press them to produce the juice, which eventually is going to become wine. So before they've gone, shesi ve'eda, in the wine press, at that point, very little juice has oozed out of the grapes yet. Therefore, at this point, it's considered their work is davka with the grapes, not with the wine, and therefore they can only eat grapes. They would not be allowed at that point to drink the wine, because the wine is not considered what they're working with yet. But once they've walked back and forth in the gas, then now it's considered they're working with both. Now it's considered they're working with the grapes as well as with the wine, and therefore that they can eat the grapes and they can drink the wine, because now they're working with both. An interesting side nachkamina that comes out of this is the Maharil mentioned in a couple of his chuvas, when you make Shech Yonu on Rosh Hashanah on the second day because of the sukkah, whether it's Yom HaArichta, Nowadays, we get all these kinds of exotic fruits. The Maharil mentions that in his times, one thing that you could say shefion on was grapes, because you couldn't get them easily during the year. There's a season for them. So he mentions that he would avoid eating grapes until the second night of Rosh Hashanah, and that way he can make shefionu on them, because based on our Gemara over here, he already made Kiddush the first night on wine, but that doesn't matter. The Gemara is saying over here that wine and grapes are considered two different things.
We can never make shefionu.
We can't make shefionu on grapes because they're available all year round, right? Right. In general, in order to make shefionu on a fruit, it has to be something seasonal, right? Mishnah says, Hoya oisiba te'enim, if a worker is working on figs, on picking figs, for example, lo yoichel ba'anovim, he's not allowed to eat grapes. Ba'anovim lo yoichel ba'te'enim, and vice versa, if he's working with grapes, he's not allowed to eat figs. Because it only applies, he's only allowed to eat from the one min that he's working with. Now, what he could do is he could hold himself back from eating ad shmagil amokam yofus until he reaches the place where the nicer ones are growing, va'oichol, and then he's allowed to eat. We learned this the other day, for example, that he can wait until Rosh Eumnin, then he can wait until he reaches the end of the row where the grapes are going to be sweeter because they're ripened better by the sun, so he's allowed to do that. And the mission
can he just eat his way up there and then eat some more?
Well, because there's only a certain amount you can eat. You can only eat kanafsha chasavecha, only enough to be full, but not enough to overeat. We learned at the very beginning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, then you can't eat achila gansa. So yeah. Continues the Mishnah. V'chulam omru ela b'shas malacha. Now, all of this that we're talking about, that he's allowed to eat, is only when he's actually doing the work. So, avum shum hoshav aveda labailim, but mitzad the point that you want to return a lost object to the owner. In other words, like this, what you would have is, for example, so Rashi explains b'shas malacha only b'shas malacha would be, for example, that he can't say that till now I've been working, now I'm going to sit down for a few minutes and start eating. He can't do that because he's wasting the owner's time. But because of Hoshav Aveda Labailin, but the fact is, it's going to take time for him to eat. And in order to restore that lost amount to the owner, Omru, therefore the Chum said, Poilim Oichlin, Bahalichosin, Me'uman La'uman, the workers are allowed to eat while they're walking from one row to another in the vineyard. So they finished one row, they're walking over to the next one. At that moment, it's not Shas Malacha, but the Balabais would prefer, it's downtime anyway, they're anyway not harvesting my grapes at that moment, they might as well eat while they're walking over there, and also when they're returning from the wine press, they brought the grapes to the wine press to press, and now they're going to go back and continue harvesting. Then they're allowed to eat at that point. They're allowed to eat at that point as well. The Rambam actually understands this piece over here to mean that it means, for example, that they're harvesting grapes. They're filling up a basket. They bring it to the wine press and then they come back. So then they were in order. So while they're walking after they emptied out the basket, then they would be allowed to eat grapes during that time. Again, even though it's not Shas Malacha, but nevertheless the Chachamim said that it would be better that way, because that way the Balabas will gain from it, but it's anyway downtime. So the Ravid actually disagrees a little bit with the Rambam on that, and then discusses what exactly does this mean about what exactly is this downtime that we're talking about, that they're eating now versus that they were versus they're not that they're eating versus that they're and it's not considered that they're working right now versus before. Anyway, the point is that we're saying there are times when in principle right now they're not actually doing the work, but nevertheless, because of Hoshav Aveda Labailim, the Chachamim are extending the school and saying the owner himself would actually prefer it this way, and therefore the workers can eat at that point. And the Mishnah finishes off over Chamorkshi Peretis. And also a donkey is allowed to eat while it's unloading, which we're going to see in the Gemara what that means. So here, as far as that matter of the workers with the grapes, so here, the Rambam phrases it like this, So he'd only, so in principle, he'd only be able to eat after he fills up the basket, not while he's filling up the basket, because then, until the basket is full, he's not considered to be doing the work yet. Means that, while they're walking and while they're doing the, while they're filling up the basket, then also they can eat. There's where the Raiva disagrees, that it means that, and says that it means when they emptied out the basket and are on their way back from the wine press, then that would be when they're allowed to eat. And anyway, the Hamur Chiperekas, and again, the donkey, when it's being unloaded, which we'll see in the Gemara what that means. So the Gemara says, if a person is working on one vine, is he allowed to eat from a different vine? So would he be allowed, Rashi describes, he's going to cut off a cluster from a better quality vine, and then he's going to walk over to a different area where he's harvesting the grapes from another vine and eat it over there. Is it minyin shat and noisin lekelev shal balabais b'inim? Does it only have to be the same species that you're putting into the balabas's kelev? So you have that, because it's all grapes. Oduma mimashat and noisin lekelev shal balabais b'inim. Maybe it has to be. You can only eat from what you're actually putting into the kelev of the balabais. Well, that can, you don't, because here it's a different vine. The im tinsa loymar oisib gefen zel lo yoichab gefen acher. Now, if you're going to think to say that in fact you can't do that, that when you're working on one grapevine you can't eat from a different one, then you'd have to ask. Obviously, it can't be shur b'machuber heichi ochel. We learned before that a shur is allowed to eat from what's attached to the ground that it's working on. How would that be possible? Meaning, Rashi says like this: well, how do you have what kind of work does a shur do with what's machuber? Is, for example, that you have the shur is hitched up to a wagon. And you're going, the workers are going and harvesting the grapes and putting them in the wagon. So therefore, so they're standing next to one grapevine and cutting the, and harvesting the grapes and putting them in the wagon. Meanwhile, the animal is a little bit ahead, is standing in front of the next grapevine. So obviously then, if you're going to say that the animal is allowed to eat from a chuber, if you're going to say you can't eat from one grapevine when you're working by another, then you wouldn't be allowed to eat. You wouldn't. Then the animal would not have the right to eat then. You'd be able to muzzle it to prevent it from doing that. And yet we were saying before that it's not so. So obviously that would mean that you could go from one grapevine to another. Tosfos gives a different explanation that what it means is that no, if the animal is threshing the mechuber, if you have, for example, if the animal is threshing grain, what if that grain is still attached to the ground? It's one thing, in other words, when the grain has already been harvested and it's in bundles, then you don't have to, then each bundle is considered its own thing, and therefore you can say the animal is eating from one part of the bundle while it's threshing a different part of the bundle, and that's fine. That's still considered bedavashu oichelboy. But if you're talking about if it was the mechuber and you were going to have it threshing, wouldn't every stalk be considered something of its own? And therefore, how would it be eating from one and when it's working on another? So wouldn't that show, therefore, that within the same min, you are in fact allowed to eat? So that would answer the question that you are allowed to eat from one grapevine while you're working on another. But the Gemara says that's not a proof because Amr of Shisha Breder of Iggy Besorcha. No, because you could be talking about that, you could be talking about, for example, a very long grapevine. So therefore, you could conceivably have it. The same grapevine, the same branch is so long that it extends from the back of the wagon where they're harvesting the grapes that are attached to one part of it all the way to the front, and then the animal is eating from a different part of the same branch. Or according to Tosfos, the point is that it would be, for example, beans or grain with very long stalks, so it is perfectly possible, even the mechuber, that it's threshing one part and eating a different part of the same stalk or of the same plant. So no proof one way or the other. Well, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof. The Mishnah had said, "How you oisib te'enim lo yochaban novim? If you're working with figs, then you're not allowed to eat grapes. Ha te'enim or te'enim dumya te'enim van novim oichel." Now the implication seems to be that you would be allowed to eat from one group of figs when you're working on another one in a way that would have been parallel to doing grapes and figs. Obviously, grapes and figs grow on different trees. It's impossible for them to grow on the same tree, and that's also but implying that if it was two different fig trees, even though it's different ones, then it would be mutter. So v'yamet oisib gefen ze'en eichel b'gefen acher. If you're going to say when you're working on one grapevine, you can't eat from another one, heichem ashkachas la, how would that be possible? And the answer is omen of shisha b'edin of idi b'mudlis. You could have, for example, that you have, the branches of the two fig trees are enmeshed together. You have the trees are growing closely together, and the branches are intertwined with one another. So therefore, so you actually have, you are working on that min, you are working on that tree. You're not primarily harvesting the fruit from the one tree. It's you're working mainly on the other one, but the fact is you are working with it as well. And now in the case of grapes and figs also, what you could have is, for example, Rashi describes, now you can have, you have a grapevine. If you don't, you usually put something by a grapevine so that it will grow and hang on that and grow off the ground. Otherwise it grows loosely all over the ground. So like this, you could have a fig tree over there where you have that you train the grapevine to climb up the fig tree. So there you can have the same kind of thing. You're saying that the branches of the grapevine and of the fig tree are intertwined. So yes, you are busy with one versus the other, but it's not the same min. But if you had a similar kind of thing with two fig trees where the branches are intermingled, then yes, you would be allowed to. So yeah, that could be what the Mishnah means. So we're not talking about where the trees are completely distinct, then you might not be able to, but when the branches are intertwined together. So with grapes versus figs, you wouldn't be allowed to, but with figs versus figs, you would. Okay. The Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof. The Mishnah have continued. You're allowed to hold yourself back from eating until you reach the nicer quality food, and then you're going to eat. If you're going to say you could anyway, when you're working on one grapevine, you'd be allowed to eat from another one, well, then why bother waiting? Then he should be able to go and bring a grapevine from someplace else, from the better one, and eat them where he's working right now. So why are we saying, he can hold himself back until he reaches that nicer area. Let him just walk over to that nicer area, bring the grapes from there, and eat them while he's working on the other area. Big Mom says, no, plus there's some bits on the lock like I'm a butter. There, there's no question he's taking off extra time from work. And again, every moment of his time is the owner's, and he's not allowed to waste it. So then there's no question. Obviously, he's not allowed to do that. What if his wife or children are along with him? It's take your child to work day. We had this in the Gemara the other day as well. So they're along to help him. But they're not actually hired for it. So they're not the ones who are allowed to eat themselves. So now they could, for example, while he's working on one part, on harvesting the grapes in one area, they'd be able to go to a different part where the grapes are better quality and bring them some. Nice. And now the question would be, would he be allowed to do that? So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's continue. The Mishnah had said, again, that all of this din of eating on the job is only b'shas malacha, only when they're actually doing the work. But for the sake of returning the lost time to the owner, the workers can eat when they're going from one row to another, when they're returning from the wine press, where again, according to the Rambam, it means more like while they're filling up the basket and when they're on the way back, and according to the Rambam, specifically only once they've emptied out the basket and they're on the way back. Whatever the case, the point is, now, Savarua, for purposes of the question, we assume Mahalach Ka'isa Maisa Jami. We assume that when they're walking from one row to another, it's considered like doing the Maisa. Implying it's only a takana derabbanan that they're allowed to eat at that point, even though it is b'shas malacha. But nevertheless, we're saying that only mitzad derabbanan can they eat the daraisa le'ochel, implying on a daraisa level they would not have been allowed to eat alma oisa begefen ze'ena ochel begefen acher. That would show that yes, when you're working on one grapevine, you can't eat from another, because yes, they're walking from one place to another would be considered working, but it's not working on the particular grapevine that they're eating from. Well, that would answer our question. So the takana would be that they're allowed to eat b'shas malacha, but it's not b'shas malacha while they're working on this particular tree. But the Gemara says, loy, not necessarily. Maybe, in fact, a person working on one grapevine is allowed to eat from a different one. we can say that the walking from one road to another is not considered like Oysa Maisa, so in fact it wouldn't be considered the time of work at all, and Midoraisa he wouldn't have been able to eat, and only Midorabanan because of Hoshav Aveda is he allowed. So still no proof one way or the other. Ikadamri, another version of the question and answer went like this. Savrua Mahalach Lavka Oysa Maisa Dami. We started with the assumption the other way around that walking from one road to another is not considered like Oysa Maisa. Behind the time of Demaraisa Layachal, and the reason that would explain why you can't eat on a Daraisa level, Mishum de Lavka Oysa Maisa Dami, precisely because he's not actually doing the work at that time, implying if he was actually doing work at the time, then he would be allowed to eat, which would show Alma Oysa Begefen Za'uchal Begefen Asher, which would show that in that case, then he would in fact be allowed to eat while he's working from another. And Tosfos discusses over here, we're not necessarily talking about where they're carrying grapes from one grapevine to another, but rather where they're carrying their tools from one grapevine to another. If we assume that that's considered part of the mice, part of the work, then we're saying that at that point they're allowed to eat only because of a Hoshav Aveda Labayim. Otherwise we're saying that if you're working on one grapevine, you would be allowed to eat from a different one. And the Gemara says, not necessarily. Maybe not. And we can say when he's walking from one road to another is in fact considered like Oysa Maisa. So therefore, the Gemara has left the question open. Most of the Rishonim understand that Rambam Paskins and Shulchan Aruch Paskin, that in fact he's not allowed to eat he's not allowed to eat from one grapevine while he's working on the other one. There are some Rishonim who learn that maybe he would be allowed to. To finish off the Gemara, the Mishnah had said of a chamok shiperekas. The Mishnah had said that the donkey can eat while it's being unloaded. The question is shiperekas mehechan ochel. How is it? Where is it eating when it's being unloaded? Rashi explains we're unloading everything all at once and we leave, so it has nothing to eat then. So Tosfos explains that what it means is really that it's not seeing anything that's on its back. Why should it be allowed to eat? If we're saying that the reason why you can't muzzle the animal is because it sees it, then okay, we said it's not technically because it sees it. We learned the other day, but nevertheless, why would we be saying that it's a tree perekus? And the answer is ema ad chite perekus. What it means is until it's unloaded, while it's walking, it's allowed to eat from what it's on its back. Which means Tosfos says it's not really a continuation of the previous din in the Mishnah of Hoshav Aveda L'Bailim. It's a separate statement that as far as the dinim of Chasima, you can't muzzle it and prevent it from eating while it's walking and while it eats what's on its back. Tanena l'hadatan rabbanan, in which case on Mishnah is saying briefly what we learn in more detail in a Braisa, which means that Braisa is reliable and we can follow it. A donkey or a camel can eat from what's loaded on their back. But you can't take the food from there and give it to them yourself because the whole din is lois saksin. You can't prevent it from eating, but you can't actually give it from something that belongs to the balabais.
Okay. Yeah, right?
Yeah.